Today is Wednesday, June 18th, 15th of Sivan. This is the women's Chumash share. We're up to Dvarim Perek Chav Ches.
Okay, Rabotai. Last week we began the Brachot and Klalot in Mishneh Torah. And what I'd like to focus on today, we had read basically from Pasuk Aleph through Yudalid, just to give us a little flavor of what the brachot are. They're actually very, very brief, very concentrated. The klalot will be incredibly long. 98 klalot will be recorded. I distributed to you a sheet which has several very important comments on some of the psukim that we learned, and I wanted to show it to you inside. So if you look at the first sheet, it should say on the left-hand side is Reish Lamed Aleph. That's the top sheet. It says on the top Reish Lamed Aleph. So if you look at Pasuk Bet, so in Pasuk Aleph it said, if you will listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Unitancha Hashem Elokecha Elyona Kol Goyei Oretz. Uva'u Alecha Kol HaBrachot Ha'ele V'hi Sigucha. All of the brachot will be bestowed upon you and they will reach you. V'hi Sigucha. When? Ki Tishma B'Kol Hashem Elokecha. It's a very unusual word. It already says Uva'u Alecha Kol HaBrachot Ha'ele. Everybody understands what that means. Everybody will be blessed with those blessings. What does v'hi sigucha mean? They will, literally it means they will reach you. What does that mean? What does it add? It doesn't really add much. So, there are several interpretations. Ibn Ezra, for example, believes that it refers to two situations, whether you plan on making a request for them or you choose not to make a request for them. Sometimes when you're a good boy, so your little 8-year-old says, "Ma, I was good today, have a pleasant." So you might come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, "You know what? I've done exactly what you said. I was Shamoah Tisha. Can you please bestow the brachot upon me?" That's situation number one. V'hi sigucha, says Ibn Ezra, afilu lo tevakshem. That's without even making the request. If one goes ahead and is loyal and devoted unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he promises that even in the absence of a formal request, you will be privileged to have those brachot upon you. That's fine. Very simple. But Sforno takes a very interesting position in which he decides to get into an incredible debate that is recorded in Masechet Brachot, a fundamental debate that is raging today between our community and the right and the yeshivish community, a raging debate. So take a look at Sforno. It's on the left-hand column. Uva'u alecha kol ha-brachot ha'ileh. Afal pi shelo tishtadel atala hasigam. When? Ki tishma b'kol Hashem Elokecha. V'zeh kishitihyeh toratcha keva umelachtecha arai. He says as follows. You know what v'hi sigucha means? A situation where you will not even have to bother working. The brachot will be running after you. 99% of the brachot, and we read them quickly last week, focus on the material world. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say he was going to bless? Your fruit, your cattle, and so on and so forth. For your fruit to be blessed, you have to be a farmer. You have to go out early in the morning and plow. Then you have to plant. You got to water everything. And you have to harvest. It still doesn't mean you're going to have a bushel of apples to harvest. That requires the blessing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the blessing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not independent of man's involvement to engage in production. You can have a cattle, you can have an enormous flock, One of the brachot was that God is going to bless all of your flock. That's very nice. But you have to take care of sheep and cattle. They have to be fed. They have to be bathed and cleaned. All it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu guarantees you big numbers. Says Sfarno, what does Vihi Sigucha mean? The brachot will be running after you, will be effective, despite the fact that you don't even lift a finger. How is it possible that somebody doesn't lift a finger and all of the brachot will now be upon you? So here he enters that famous debate between Rab Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Torah is the number one thing in the world. Your work is that something else. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. So he believes that your work can be secondary, that if somebody is completely, if a community is completely devoted and busy learning all day, Melachtecha na'aseit al yidei acherim. It doesn't mean that what? It does not mean that God is going to go ahead miraculously and allow fruits to grow and grain to grow without somebody planting the world, planting the land. Nobody's going to do that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to do nisim v'nifla'ot. It means somebody else will do it to you. That's Rab Shimon Bar Yochai's ideal dream. That everybody should be sitting and learning, and somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that melachtecha na'aseit al yidei acherim. Somebody else will take care of your, and therefore, from your perspective, it will be vehi sigucha. The brachot will have reached you without you lifting a finger. Rabbi Yishmael responds to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and says, that's not the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to live. We recite every single day, V'yasafta deganecha. You are supposed to go out and gather your grain. You're supposed to make that effort. Doesn't mean you're not supposed to learn. Obviously you're supposed to learn a little. But you're supposed to go ahead and put part of your day for working, part of your day for learning, and so on and so forth. Very nice. The Gemara then goes on to say, Harbe asu kerab Shimon bar Yochai velo alu v'yadam. Many people tried that formula of Rab Shimon bar Yochai. Sit and learn all day, do nothing but Torah mitzvot, and expect that melachtecha na'aseit al yidei acherim, and they and their families starve to death. Lo alu v'yadam. According to Rabbi Yishmael, Harbe asu kedivrei Rabbi Yishmael. Many people follow the ways of Rabbi Yishmael and the alu biyadam, and they succeeded. They were able to work. They were able to learn, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara clearly advocates, and see, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's position is based on that if you're going to be spending all day plowing and planting, and this is Torah matahei olah. Who's going to be learning? That's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's concern. Nobody in this world is going to be learning. Okay. So, and Rabbi Shmuel said that's no way to have a society. Maybe individuals, but certainly not the masses. So in this perspective, now Sfarno says, this is the ideal world. He adopts Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, where melachtecha na'aseit al yidei acherim, and that is the pshat of Vehi Sigucha. In addition to uva'u alecha abrachot, that is if you work. But if you want to devote your life totally to spiritual matters, v'hi sigucha, the brachot will reach you without engaging in any effort whatsoever. And as I said today, this is a major debate between our respective communities, And it's unbelievable. Somebody told me that they have a cousin in Kiryat Sefer. Okay? And their daughter is applying to high school in Kiryat Sefer, and there is a policy, they get this in your admission, if the father is working, you need not apply to this high school. You need not apply. Because they only take young girls, young women into high school, whose fathers are learning day and night. If your father was working sickly, don't bother submitting an application. That's the type of attitude that is unfortunately being circulated, and it's very difficult to maintain a whole segment of society on welfare. It's almost impossible to sustain it, and it's just unbelievable. And this has now become the ideal. People today said, when you ask them for a shidduch, if the guy's going to school, he's going, oh no, I'm not interested. I want to sit and learn. It becomes like, it's just, that's a fundamental difference. We don't believe that that's the ideal. Even in the ideal world, if when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will grant you blessings, it still means that you should engage in work. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have for the ilui iluyin, for the special, special people, to have them sitting and learning and have Klal Yisrael support them. I think that's terrible. That's very productive. But to have this on the mass level,
it's not
of course. And accountability. And accountability. There's no accountability. Yeah? Okay, but that's right. But if they want to, embrace poverty and do paper yourself, that's fine. But don't expect. I don't think they have a right to expect that the community now, and they all do it. Every kollel is raising money from funds, and they have to, in Israel, the government is lambasted every time they cut more funds. That's not. It's a difficult life sometimes. You guys, you have to be woken up twice a day. Once in the morning, once after your afternoon nap. Yes?
Someone in the middle, like for me personally, some things you have to work for, some things do come to you without you doing anything. That happens to me.
Okay, so you're very blessed. But most of us don't win the lottery.
Happen.
But most of us engage in work, most of us work. I'm not saying that our efforts are not rewarded, but we work. Very few people win the lottery. I buy the ticket every lousy week. And I somehow Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't listen to me. He listens. He doesn't give me a favorable response. That's all. That's point number one. Point number two, says Svarno, V'hine hizkir berachot bayit rishon, V'amar, on the next page, if you just look to the back of that page, Omar, she is Pulahen behold H Yishmruata Mitzvot, Ad Omro, Yikimcha Hashem Lola Am Kadosh, Vizahaya Bitchila Bayichani. If you look at Pasuk Tet, after listing in Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zion, Chet, which describe very tangible blessings. God will bless you in the city, He'll bless you in the field, you'll have children, your fruit and animals, everything, businesses, travel when you go, you will be successful in defending yourself, that's Yitein Hashem et Oyvecha Chagrim, and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, Yikimcha Hashem lo le'am kadosh, ka'ashen nishba la bosecha. Says Sfarno, this bracha refers to Bayisheni. What at the beginning of Bayisheni serves as a hallmark historically for Sfarno making the claim that is the fulfillment of the vision Yikimcha Hashem lo la'am. Why? What do we know about Bayisheni as opposed to Bayis Rishon? What do we know about life of Am Yisrael? Correct, but from a religious point of view, what characterized the life of a good part of Am Yisrael during Bayis Rishon? What particular transgression characterized it? Avodah Zarah. Bayis Sheni, we find that the Gemara tells us that it was an incredibly committed generation, and they have to pinpoint what was the reason why the Second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And what do they come up with? Sinat Chinam. But they don't identify you know, Gezel, and Shmichus Damim. That's the way the description of the first Beit HaMikdash was. It wasn't just idolatry, which was prevalent all over the place. They were engaged in murder, and there was no sense of justice, just the way Yeshayahu describes it in Perek Aleph of Yeshayahu. We read it on Shabbat Chazon, every single Shabbat, every single year, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. So he wasn't making things up. During Bayit Sheni, Am Yisrael was incredibly committed unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, Sfarno believes this is now the fulfillment, Yikimcha Hashem Lo La'am Negoi Kadosh. That will be the time when you will be recognized by all as having been uplifted to the point where you are now recognized as a holy nation. So those are 2 points that Sfarno makes concerning the bracha. Point number 3. Please take a look now at Please take a look at page, if you look at the front page, which is Reish Lamed Aleph, this is Reish Lamed Gimel, the Meiram Maharam, on the bottom right-hand page, right-hand of the page, bottom the Maram. Maram, as you all know, we've seen him from time to time, is Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg, the Maram of Rothenburg, the great Maram of Rothenburg, who was basically the primary teacher for all Ashkenazic Rishonim, for which the Ashkenaz tradition has now filtered down to us via the Rush, who was his primary student, many of the Balei HaTosfos. So the Maram was a very important figure. We've seen his commentary in the past. His commentary is simply based on one observation every single time. How many times does this word appear in Tanakh? Especially when it's an unusual word. And based on that, he now tries to make an effort to see a theme between those two selections where that particular word happens to be quoted in the text. So take a look at the Maram in a second comment. Rabbeinu Asher. Rabbeinu Asher, his commentary is found in the Gemara. He is an Ashkenazic scholar who happened to have been a rabbi in Spain. Mentioned that before, that because Sephardic Jews paid a lot better salaries than the Ashkenazic Jews. But he is one of the main Ashkenazic commentaries. So if you remember correctly, if you look at Pasuk Chavchet, Pasuk Yud. Look at Pasuk Yud for a minute. V'ra'u chol amei ha'aretz, all of the nations of the world will recognize kishem Hashem nikra alecha, that the name of God is upon you, is pronounced upon you, v'yar'u mimecha, and they will be in awe, of fear of you. The Gemara, and he makes reference to this, refers to what? So this is the person wearing tefillin shel rosh. The fact that tefillin shel yad are always covered. The Torah writes, v'haya licha le'ot al yadcha. There is no mitzvah to expose the tefillin shel yad. In fact, many people, after they put their thing, if they're wearing long sleeves, they cover it with their shirt, they're wearing a jacket. But tefillin shel rosh are always to be exposed. And the Gemara says that by donning the tefillin shel rosh, that is the fulfillment of V'ra'u kishem Hashem nikra alecha. How will anybody see the name of God upon you? If they see the tefillin shel rosh, which has the shin. There is a letter shin, implanted on the bayit. So that's what he says initially. Now he writes, V'yaru mimecha, the second line. V'yaru bet. There are 2 times in the Torah where the word V'yaru appears. Here, v'idach acharei kein b'parshat vayelech in the end, in Parshas Vayera, where it says, Hakel et ha'am hazeh ha'anashim v'hanashim v'hataf. Please assemble all of the people. This refers to the mitzvah of Hakel. Once every 7 years, there is a mitzvah for every single Jewish to appear in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, on Chol HaMoed, first day of Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and the king is of Am Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, is that they build, on the Har HaBayit, they build this huge platform, and the king ascends the platform, and he reads sections of Sefer Dvarim. That's the mitzvah of Hakel. Everyone is supposed to be there. Little kids, babies, infants, every single member of Klal Yisrael. And there is a reason. Lema'an, he continues at the pasuk. Yishma'u, so that you will hear the words. Ulema'an yilmedu, v'yar'u et Hashem Elokeichem, you will fear God. V'shamru la'asot, etc., etc., etc. Very nice. It's not an unusual idea that you will, you know, many times it says li'yir'ah et Hashem Elokeichem. Here it uses the word v'yar'u, v'yar'u. And now, Maharam is now going to comment on the fact that it says v'ra'u here, and he has just established that what does that mean? What does that mean? That refers to tefillin. And what is the context in Hakel? What are you supposed to be doing? What mitzvah is being performed by the melech?
He's reading the
Sefer Dvarim. So what mitzvah is it? It's Torah study b'tzibur. Talmud Torah b'tzibur, where the Melech is teaching everybody. And there too the word v'yarumi mecha appears. Says Maharam, Lefi shishaninu b'sof perakama de Bava Kama. It has been recorded at the end of the first parak of Bava Kama. Amar Rabba Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Chana said, Azlina bata Rav Yochanan l'mishel shmaitza. I went to Rav Yochanan to learn a halacha from him. I went to his school. Ki heve ayil mi beit hakisei, when Rav Yochanan came out of the bathroom, v'nafik, when he went into the bathroom, v'nafik, then he went out, mashe yadei, after he went to the bathroom, he washed his hands, umanach tfilin, then he put on tfilin, umivarech, and he recited a bracha on tefillin. V'hada amar, and after that he taught us the shir. After that he taught the shir. This is a story which Rabbi Bar Chana quotes. Notice what he did. Came out of the bathroom, he was not wearing tefillin, because you're not allowed to wear tefillin in the bathroom. So he had to take them off, go to the bathroom, and now, as he is about to put the shir, begin the shir, before he begins the shir, what does he do? He puts his tefillin on. Umakshe ha-sefer, and there are many people who ask, v'ha'amar mar, gadol Talmud Torah, shehatalmud mevi lidei ma'aseh. That whenever you have a conflict between doing a mitzvah and learning, what should you always strive to do? One opinion is, you should always do learning. Strange. Why should you learn? Shahatalmud mevi lidei ma'aseh. Because learning will now enhance your ability to what? To observe. Very strange. He wasn't about to go play golf. He was about to do a mitzvah. And nonetheless, the Gemara is questioning his behavior. In Cain, haya lo lilmod tchila, v'achakach haya lahaniach tfilin. What should Rabbi Yochanan have done? He should have first what? Given the shir. Then he should put on tefillin. Why was he so machfit to put on tefillin before he gives the shir? Umishani, and the answer is, lo kasha. I'll explain it. Ho lemigmar, ho leagmure. It depends whether you're learning for yourself or you're planning on teaching. Lemigmar means to learn for yourself. The agmure means to teach others. Vadai lilmod la'atzmo, that if you're learning for yourself, Talmud Adif. There is no doubt that Torah study is the highest value for yourself. Sheha Talmud, now on the next page, which is the back, Mevi L'day Ma'aseh. Aval la'agmurei. But when you're teaching somebody else, says the Maharam, Aval la'agmurei, le'acherim ma'asei adif. Action goes before learning. V'hai dehacha, in this case, this story, Mirab Yochanan, what was Rabbi Yochanan planning on doing? He wasn't planning on learning on his own. He was about to do what? To give the shiur. And when you're serving in the capacity to do what? To teach others, what's the most important thing? To practice, not to teach. Al kein monach tefillin. Therefore, what did Rabbi Yochanan do before he began the shiur? He put on tefillin. V'hada Amar. V'zehu shiramas hamisora. This is now the reference, the understanding, the hint from these two episodes, these two times when the word v'yaru appears. Mitchila katuv. First it says, in our parsha is what? V'yaru mimecha. And what does this refer to, as we just said? What does the Yarumi Mecca in our pasuk mean? Elu tefillin. Lomar, sheyesh lecha lahaniach tefillin me'ikara, v'hadar kativ, hakel et ha'am l'man yishmu l'man yilmedu. Then, after you learn, then it says the Yarumi Mecca last. But which the Yarumi Mecca goes first here? Putting on tefillin. What am I driving you crazy with all of this for? This is one of the most powerful lessons that the Maharam wants to teach us.
In terms of a teacher, a rabbi, you set an example.
Correct.
So before you can teach your students, you have to
say it a little sharper. What Maharam believes is that the most effective means possible to serve as a teacher is not to engage about teaching. Just act, teach by example. By example. So when you have a conflict, says Maharam, between performing a mitzvah or giving a shiur, you want to make the greatest impression with your talmidim, perform the mitzvah. And then you'll start talking about it. So if, just imagine if the shiur, which Rabbi Yochanan was about to give, was about the mitzvah of tefillin. What would have had a greater impact on his students about the mitzvah of tefillin? Had he given the shiur, and after the shiur they would go home, and then he would put on tefillin, of course. No, Rabbi Yochanan's going to put on tefillin. Or is it part of the experience for his Talmidim's vantage point that what should they be doing? Watching him put on tefillin. So before he delivers the shiur, he puts on the tefillin first. Says the Maharam, this is alluded to, obviously not the pshat, is alluded to by having two V'yarumi Mechas. One V'yarumi Mecca is here putting on tefillin. That V'yarumi Mecca is about teaching the masses. The melech's job is to teach. That's the mitzvah hakel. But you want to know what the most effective method of teaching is? Just conduct yourself properly. This idea is the counter-argument to the entire Mussar movement. There was a movement in Jewish education about 100 years ago or something like that. It was obviously headed by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Mashgiach for the Mir, who believed that you should exercise and devote time of your learning to reading Mussar books. Learning Mussar. And then a Rebbe should sit there and learn Mesudas Yesharim, Chayyus HaVavos. And by spending time on teaching somebody how to engage in ethical perfection, that's the way you convey this sense of ethical perfection to your students. It was one of the most dismal failures in the history of Jewish education, because no one could aspire to that type of a level. They were worried about things that most people on this planet are not terribly worried about. And I saw such a person, you know, the Mashgiach and YU, before Rabbi Blau. He's the one everybody knows today, because he is with it. He's for today's generation. But for 40 years, the Mashgiach and YU was Rav Lessin, who came straight from Kletsk, and he never made the transition between Kletsk in Europe and the United States. He never did. He only spoke Yiddish, a very heavy Lithuanian Yiddish. He wore a long kapotah. And what he was worried about with guys sitting and learning the Beis Medrash. Well, let me see. He's a pencil off a Gemara. So who's has to depend off the Gemara? The hostage can cover the health for the Gemara? That's what he was worried about. That by putting your pen on the Gemara, when you were sitting and studying a Rambam and a Rivet, but your pen was on the Gemara. How could you have so little respect for the Gemara that you put your lousy pen on the Gemara? And people would go around saying, this is what he's worried about in the 1960s and 1970s in Yeshiva University. This is what about that a guy learning in the basement, Machalekes Lam Rhyme, he's got a pen on the Gemara. So we knew that he wasn't... But that's the type of demands that they have. That every single action has to be a recognition of the fact, every action, I'm in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch. Every action. So if it means putting your pen on the Gemara is, you're not keeping HaKadosh Baruch right in front of you, there's something wrong with you. It failed. And those who were against the Musar movement said, the best way for a Rebbe to serve, as to give Musar to his students, is just conduct himself properly. That's all. Whatever the, if he wants to convey a sense of ethical behavior, what to do, just conduct himself in a certain fashion and let his Talmidim emulate that. That's the idea proposed by the Maran. Of course, he finds this remiss, but the idea is more important than the remiss. That you make it a powerful statement that the way to teach is to act appropriately. That is the most effective means of teaching possible. Incredible. I say that all the time. All the time. There's no doubt about it. Of course. There's no doubt about it.
What do you tell that child?
I say all the time. If I see some guy in shul and he's sitting there yapping, a whole chazaras hashanas, a whole time. And I go over to him quiet and say, you know, shh. And for 2 minutes. And 30 seconds later, he's talking again. Would I have any hava minute? Would I have to be so shocked that his kids don't daven at all? It would shock me. Well, why should it shock me? If there is no guidance whatsoever, why should a kid take learning seriously if there, no one, not one parent ever bothers to go to a shir, to spend time learning? Why should anybody... I'm not saying that it always works. Sometimes parents are very healthy role models, and thus kids not always interested. But the converse is certainly not a formula. That's point number three. Number four. Please look at Pasuk Petvav. Look at Pasuk Petvav. Excuse me, Pasuk Yudalit. Pasuk Yudalit. It's the last Pasuk of the unit. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you should be very, very good, very good, and so on and so forth. And then he reminds us as a wrap-up. V'lo tasur mikol ha-dvarim asher anuchi mitzaveh etchem hayom yamin u'smol. L'lechet acharei aluhim acharim l'avdam. Please, don't deviate from any mitzvah which HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, neither to the right nor to the left, and what will you choose instead? To worship Avodah Zarah. Wow. That's like going from one end of the spectrum to the next end of the spectrum. Don't deviate a little, right to the left, and what's the next step? Avodah Zarah. That's not what you would expect when you ask somebody to be medakdeik and not to be deviate a little to the right, a little to the left. You know, deviating a little to the left doesn't necessarily mean that what am I doing? I'm worshiping idols. It's a very unusual statement. So there are several responses to this. The Ramban says, look at Pasuk Yudalid, it's page Reish Lamed Gimel, it's the last page in the handout, the back of the handout, page Reish Lamed Gimel, Ramban on the right-hand column on the Pasuk Yudalid, says the Ramban, Nimshach imki sishmash yavo alecha kol habracha kasher tishma lemitzvotav, t'kaasher tasur, kasher lo tasur, yamin usmol mikol advarim asher anuchim etzavcha b'inyin avodah zarah. Says the Ramban. You can be the most pious person in the world, but if one aveira which you do is going to be worshipping Avodah Zarah, says the Ramban, it's going to negate everything else you do. Everything else you do. Why do you think the Ramban is making such a statement? You have to put it in its proper context. In our day and age, we have no understanding of what this Ramban is talking about. You mean to tell me you could imagine somebody who does every single mitzvah, Midatik, observes Kashrut and Paras HaMishpacha, everything, every Shabbos and every Yontif, but worships Avodah Zarah? Of course. And there were people who worshipped Avodah Zarah and then came Shalosh Ta'amim Bashana Yireh Kol Zuchur Chos Ben Hashem Alukacha. They came Shalosh Regalim and they offered Korbanot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't see it as a conflict. And it's historical reality. And the Ramban knows, and we read the Ramban last week, where this entire, both Tochechot are projections, predictions of what's going to happen in the future. It's not just telling us, if you do this, this is prophetic vision. This will undoubtedly happen. And he knows that there have been times in Jewish history, once again, particularly during Bayis Rishon, when there were dozens of people, hundreds and thousands of people, who came to the Beit HaMikdash, who observed every single mitzvah, but they also worshipped Avodah Zarah. Says the Ramban, if you engage in any Avodah Zarah, it simply cancels out everything else. It's not worth anything that it's written on. And therefore, says the Ramban, I will disagree with the Baha, the Baal HaLachot Gedolot, who records this Lo Tasur as one of the 613 commandments. Special command, don't deviate and don't worship, don't deviate to the right or to the left. And worship Avodah Zarah. Says the Ramban, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that. I don't need it. Because if you're going to worship Avodah Zarah, I don't need a pasuk to tell me don't deviate to the right or to the left. Why? Because everything that you do will automatically be totally null and void. Totally null and void. Totally null and void. That's point number two. Or number four, whatever it is. Point number five is Sfardo's incredible point. Look at, on the left-hand column, Sfarno. Lo tasur mikol hadvarim asher anochim etzav etchem hayom yamin u'smol, shelo yishanu et mitzvot ha'el yitbarach, bifrat b'inyan ha'mishpat, v'lo yamiru et shara mitzvot ben menhege hedyot, et mitzvot min Hashem al umada, kol shekein, shekishiyasu zeh l'chvot kadmonim, shehenhigu otam ha'minagim lo l'chvot konam, v'lo l'shmor mitzvotav. it's difficult to know what he's referring to, but many parshanim commentaries latter day think that Sfarno is making an allusion to people who are very pious and very devoted, and they observe every single mitzvah, but they make changes about certain mitzvot. Who in Jewish history, once again during Bayis Sheni, might this be characterizing? People who are devoted to every single mitzvah. Correct. Precisely. Claims many that what Sfarno is reacting to is not somebody who is abandoning Torah and mitzvot. Somebody who's loyal to Torah and mitzvot, but makes a couple of minor changes to the right or to the left, any slight change, not in accordance with the tradition of our the rabbinic tradition. And I've always told you, Stukim and Karaim observed every single mitzvah of the Torah. Most of the mitzvot they observed exactly the way we do it. However, the handful of mitzvot where we believe, where they believe, that the rabbinic community misinterpreted the text, they decided to follow the text loyally. So they have a couple of differences. So their tefillin was on their palm of the hand. Ukshartam liot al yadecha. Because it says it on your hand. Let's say up here. Al yadecha. Right? It says, Uritem oto, in the Parsha of Tzitzis. Look at them. So next to the Israeli flag, there was a pair of tzitzis hanging in the shul. To look at. That's what it says. Uritem oto. How does the rabbinic community interpret Uri Tamato? Not that you have to look at tzitzis, that they have to have the capacity to be seen. Therefore, the mitzvah of tzitzis is only during the day and not at night. Because you can't see things at night. That they said, where do you get this nonsense from? So Sfarno is perhaps alluding, I'm not convinced that this might be the right shot, but there some claim that he is alluding to this, of Yishanu et mitzvoto el yitbarach. It's not that they're abandoning a mitzvah. They observe this mitzvah. But they're changing the way you do the mitzvah. And that is what prophetically, again, this is now for Bayit Sheni, he said that as well, and he's warning as a vision, please, don't be seducted, don't be tempted to follow this type of interpretation of the text, but rather rely on the rabbinical interpretation, even if that rabbinical interpretation does not necessarily conform to the letters of the word itself. It's possible that he has that in mind. I'm not 100% convinced of it. I'm just alerting you that some do interpret Sfarno in that fashion. Sfarno lived, he was in the late Rishonim time. The late Rishonim. So he's in the 14th century, some around the time of the late 12th century, late 13th century, early 14th century. Yeah. And then finally, take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, which we read last time. Unitancha Hashem l'rosh v'lo l'zanav. God will place you at the top, literally at the head, and not at the tail. V'hayita rak l'mala v'lo tia l'mata. Now, obviously it seems to be, it's poetry. So, in poetry, you all often will use, just different phrases to reflect the same idea. Because once you are already l'rosh, it automatically means that you're not what? There's enough. Once you are l'ma'ala, it means you're not going to be l'mata. So the Ramban is alerting to us, to take a look at the Ramban's comments. Be'uro v'tam l'rosh v'lo l'zanav. It's again, it's on page Reish Lamed Yemel. Be'uro l'rosh l'chol ha'amim v'lo l'zanav l'echad mikol ha'goyim. Ki yitachen shiyye l'rosh ha'amim rabim v'zanav l'amechad nechbad mimenu. Says the Ramban. It is very possible, and today if you look at the world political, it's very easy to figure this out, that somebody can be recognized as a great nation amongst what? All of the nations in their area. Okay? So you look at the Arab world. So which country would you say is the most exalted country in the Arab world? Well, let's say Saudi Arabia, because they have all their money and they're all their oil. Fun. So within the Arab world, Saudi Arabia is l'rosh. But when you compare them to the United States or to Great Britain, they're nothing, right? It's l'zanav. So that could happen to us as well. That the mere fact that you are described as l'rosh, that doesn't mean that you won't necessarily be a zanav in comparison to somebody else. It means that you're not on the bottom of the barrel based on all comparisons. Says the Rambam. Why is the double expression used, l'rosh v'lo l'zanav? Not only are you going to be on the top, but you will not be on the bottom to anybody. That whether you look at things locally, geographically, or you look at things globally, in both cases, your ranking will always be emerging on the very, very top, l'rosh v'lo l'zanav. No matter who you compare it to, if Am Yisrael will observe the brachot under those circumstances, we will have that ability to be l'rosh v'lo l'zanav every single time around. All right, Rabotai, we'll stop here.